Eureka! You found us! Welcome to the Checkout California Radio Show, your key to California hospitality. Hosted by Rad Gantos, principal of Rad Gantos & Associates, a hospitality and commercial real estate design firm, and Craig Sullivan, executive vice president of ParkWest GC, a hospitality and commercial real estate general contractor. Checkout California is focused on our state's hospitality, travel, and tourism markets, and on the large part they play in California's vibrant and innovative economic diversity and unique quality of life. Now, here are your hosts, Rad Gantos and Craig Sullivan.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Checkout California. I am Craig Sullivan.
And I'm Rad Gantos. What do we have in the studio today?
We've got a great friend, a mentor to the hospitality industry, a creator of the boutique sector of the hotel business, Larry Broughton, also a retired Green Beret. So, Larry, welcome. And we've also got Melissa Papke with us. Now, she's not going to say anything. She already told me that, but I am introducing her.
Well, hello, Craig. Hello, Rad. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, pleasure.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, you built up the my background a little too much. You
know? Oh,
keep the bar low, dude.
never with you. Larry and I have known each other, 17-plus years.
Yeah.
We've met at a couple of the hotel conferences, Meet the Money, Alice, Lodging. And Alice wasn't even Alice then. I think it was still the UCLA conference way back then.
That's right.
Out of the gate, when I first saw Larry at Meet the Money, and Jim Butler, thank you. That is a great conference.
Yes.
I do appreciate you sponsoring the California Lodging Investment Conference as well. Larry is one of those individuals, like so many of us in the industry, that has hospitality. You ready for it?
Go ahead.
In his DNA. I say that every show.
It's
got to be at the show. But, Larry's been involved with Jouvet de Vie, one of the primary principals in that company a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
Created Broughton Hotels 17 years ago now.
Wow.
So, and Larry has got hotels under contract for management throughout California, one under construction in California that we'll talk about in a little bit, and Chicago, and you're doing some asset managing as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You got a full plate with that and looking to expand.
Yeah.
So that's good. Is there anything you want to elaborate on your colorful bio,
did I cover it all?
Yes. No,
he is modest. Oh, well, he's the father of two. Two great kids, by the way.
I do have two great kids, and that's usually where I start on this. But, no, I mean, there's a lot of things. You know, I'm working on wrapping up the second edition of one of the best-selling books that I've got out that's supposed to be hitting bookstores January 23rd, I think.
Nice.
So that's pretty exciting. I don't know. I've always got my finger in a lot of different pies, you know.
MSNBC, CNBC, various other news channels, whether they're on a national platform or a local platform.
Have you always been like that, Larry?
No. I kind of went into this begrudgingly, to be honest with you. I was a pretty shy kid growing up. I grew up in very rural New York, cow country New York, not New York City, but the other side of the state, south of Buffalo, almost at the Pennsylvania border. So a lot of cow countries, apple orchards, cornfields, that kind of stuff. Absolutely. Yeah. But I was kind of introverted kid, shy, small back then. I was a late bloomer. But my twin brother and I got into martial arts. And we thought at that point in our lives, in our late teens, that I was going to be doing that the rest of my life. And we both came out to a national martial arts tournament in San Jose, I think it was 1982, a long time ago. And I had heard then that the Army was going to be sponsoring the first Taekwondo team for the Olympics, the 1984 Olympics. And I thought, wow, this is my ticket out of very rural New York. And so I went back and spoke to the Army recruiter in my hometown. And, by the way, I didn't even study Taekwondo. I studied another martial arts style. This tells you how I think or don't think. and I said, hey, what do I need to do to get on this Army Taekwondo team? And I went into this full-on 5-minute sales pitch on why I need to be on the Army Taekwondo team. And the guy finally just put his hand up, you know, like talk to the hand kind of thing, and said, listen, you know, to be in the on the Army Taekwondo team, you have to be in the Army.
Uh-huh.
He's like, dude, I'm not an Army guy. You know, the only thing I could think of, like Gomer Pyle kind of thing. No, he was a Marine. But anyway, he got me to take the entrance exam, and I scored quite well on that, and was able to try out for Special Forces, and that just changed my life. It was at that point. I think I'd had some good underpinnings. I was a Boy Scout and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff, but I didn't have real confidence in myself. And I mean, obviously enough confidence to go talk to a staff sergeant to say, I want to be in the Army.
Five-minute pitch.
But it was there where I the envelope was really pushed, you know, because the cadre there to get people ready for Special Forces, they saw potential in me that I didn't see in me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the gifts that I now have. I'm able to see potential in people, whether it's team members in our organization or entrepreneurs and leaders that I coach through my mentoring program. I can see stuff that they can't see in themselves. And that's a real gift, I think, that a lot of leaders must possess that, frankly, don't possess. They're
very
oftentimes willing just to put warm bodies into spots, you know what I mean, instead of actually mentoring, developing, offering professional development. So that's really where I get my kicks.
And that's really the mantra that runs through Broughton Hotels is your mentoring and your team building and promoting from within. And you've created a unique culture there. I think one of the best cultures I've ever experienced.
Yeah, thank you.
Throughout the 40-plus years I've been working.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's not for everybody, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, because it does have kind of an entrepreneurial mm-hmm. bent to it. And people have to be self-starters. There's got to be a certain level of self-accountability and autonomy.
Yeah.
I hate micromanaging people. Yeah. What I prefer to do is bring people in who have tons of capacity to grow, give them the tools to do it, offer them the support that they
honestly,
need.
I think that's real leadership, Larry. I mean, I think that sometimes gets lost in the shuffle.
I think you're right.
You know, in the course of trying to be very goal-oriented or particular target-oriented, that gets lost, and then those people that may have had the beginning inklings or sparks for that get snuffed in the process.
And
you see that happen all the time.
Oh, all the time.
Way too often.
Yeah, and then the problem with that is they take that home with them.
Uh-huh.
They start to own that.
Doesn't stop at 5 o'clock.
Exactly. Right. But what? I mean, a lot of air quotes around leaders, but really managers, what do they say? Don't bring your family problems, your home problems to work.
Right.
Life doesn't work that
Absolutely.
Way. If you're going through a divorce or your kid's been arrested, you bring that to work.
Yep.
And we have to be humane enough to understand, all right, I understand it, but we got to work around it.
Right.
Just like if you have a bad day at home, you're going to take, I mean, at the office, you're going to bring that home as well.
Right.
So what we try to do, as Craig kind of alluded to, is we look at people holistically, you know. The Gallup organization does their annual State of the American Workforce survey, and they show that about 67% of the American workforce is disengaged or actively disengaged. And I really get wonkish on this stuff, but when you peel back the layers on this thing, the reason that people are disengaged is they feel like they're not being professionally developed.
Number one thing.
They want to feel better about themselves.
I can tell you from personal experience working at very, very high-end design firms that are in the hospitality industry.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that was the most it's just, you saw it kill the spirit of people.
Yeah.
You walked in there wanting to give and willing to give 200%.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Almost putting your life on hold for what you would give to this
company.
Right. And really engaged. And then it just became this, you know, unattainable targets that were put in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, and it just the brass string kept getting moved forward and forward, and then people either had to find themselves at a crossroads of either leveraging what they had learned and going somewhere else,
or
basically maybe even changing direction altogether.
Yeah, and sometimes people have to lead an organization.
Yeah.
Craig had said we like to promote from within. We do, but we also have to bring in people from the outside to bring in new blood, new set of eyes. I'll give you a quick example. We operated a hotel for the first 15 years of this hotel's existence. And then for a variety of reasons, we parted ways with this ownership group. And they hired another management company. And it was really bad for them, really bad. And they just brought us back. And we had our first meeting with them yesterday. And this is the thing that the ownership group said. We didn't realize all this emphasis you wanted to put into professional development that we looked at as an expense.
Yep.
We realized that's what provided the level of customer service. This is why people felt better about themselves. Yep. And when it was gone, it was glaring. We need to get you back in here.
They were adrift. Yeah.
Yeah. Very so sometimes you don't even realize the importance of it until it's gone.
No,
isn't that like life, right?
Well, yeah, pretty much. They're looking at the cost of it, but they're not seeing the connection, the correlation between it and that repeat business, ambassador, basically, employee that's your point of contact.
Yeah, I like that word ambassador. We use that word a lot, as well as champion.
Yeah.
We want our team members to be ambassadors and champions for their property. And if they don't feel good about their role at the property, they don't feel good about the property.
It's gonna come across.
Which means that they don't spread positive word of mouth, right? I remember my father, a really good man, World War II vet, but he did not like the place that he worked. And when he would come home, you could tell he was just ground down, you know. And I remember at a young age thinking, you know, when I own my own company one day, that's going to be different.
Yeah.
And we're not the biggest. We're not the best. But I think we are creating something that's very unique, I think.
I think unique, and I have to argue with that point. I think you are the best. You look at the sector that Braunton is thrived in and the creation of boutique hotels and the standards and the people that you bring in to all the assets. And we're going to be going to a commercial break in a couple of minutes, but I did want to get a quick update from you on the Park James.
Oh, good.
You've got that under construction.
Yeah.
How's that coming? Oak and Ivy's the restaurant. Yeah, bring us up to speed.
Yeah, so
that.
It's Oak and Violet is the restaurant. Yeah, so we've got an awesome general manager there, Weston Spiegel.
Who's on the show.
Exactly, yeah. And so we're going through the chef hiring candidate right now. I want to give a plug to our general contractor, the build group. They are just knocking it out of the park. And so we expect to be open late May, early June. Okay. It's just going to be a spectacular luxury hotel right in the heart of Menlo Park, Silicon Valley, just a few minutes from the Facebook campus and Stanford University. So we're very, very, very excited about
it. Fear the tree during football season. Uh-huh. You're
well, now, I did go to Stanford, so, Craig, be gentle with me.
Yeah. Very good. That's exciting. That's going to be. That's what 61 keys in the heart of Menlo Park.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. It's a beautiful project. I was up there with Larry a number of months ago, and they were just starting to wrap up the underground parking.
And once we got out of the ground, boy, it's gone up very, very quickly.
It's amazing. Yeah. Now, I was fortunate enough to see the model rooms.
Yes.
Now, did you make some tweaks?
Of course.
Does,
We're always tweaking the thing. The challenge for those who are in the construction and design business, you know, if you're making changes after this model room is done, it gets very costly. And so we spend a lot of time in the details of making sure that this model room is just right. But invariably, you know, as we start putting them together for real, there's going to be some minor tweaks that need to be made.
So I asked the question when Weston was on the show, Larry, is given the location, given the intensity of the technology in that location, right? Where did you guys draw the line on technology? Because he was telling us about the property, he was telling us about the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of all that noise in Menlo Park, all that technology in Menlo Park, did you guys deal with that?
Is this
an oasis? Is this a tune out?
Disconnect? What we've tried to do is make it high tech, but high touch. Is what we call it. Sadly, the more technology-driven we go, the more soulless it can become if you're not really careful about it. And so what we're not doing is we're not taking the human element out of it. You know, a lot of hotels are going towards robots, and they're going towards just simple check-in kiosk without even
I don't understand that.
Well, it takes the hospitality out of the hospitality business, right?
Thank you. Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you can't fake a positive, joyful smile and a welcoming spirit. You just can't. That will never be replaced.
No, I never understood that, honestly.
Not in the boutique sector, anyway.
I mean, I hear it every time at HD or any of these things where it's like, you know, it's the automated check-in using your cell phone to get. I'm like, That's an apartment, isn't it?
Now, I am the type of road warrior. Craig and I, we were on a business trip once, and we tried the early check-in. We tried the electronic key, and I'm all about that.
Right.
If I can get the down...
Like convenience.
Because I'm an independent traveler.
Right.
But I want people there in case I need them, if I want to ask a question, that kind of thing. But there are hotels, as we know, that are being developed that are basically... Uh-huh. There are no humans at the check-in.
Nobody. Process.
And I think that's a big mistake.
They have a total staff of 7. And, you know, there is no human touch there. So
Yeah.
You know, and
but you're right, they four-run apartment. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And so, you and I have checked into a hotel with some other speakers for a conference over a year ago up in San Francisco.
That's what I was talking
about.
And
it was a disaster. You know, yeah. It was, Larry and I both sat there and looked around and went, you know, this is all just
idiotic. You know what I just remembered, Larry? It the conversation is bringing to my mind the greeter in Laguna Beach.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not, maybe it's not a concierge desk. Maybe it's not a lobby guy, right? Mm-hmm. Check in.
Yeah.
But that face, like you're saying, that greeter,
mm-hmm.
that welcome kind of thing. Yeah, I think at a certain point, it's like the cell phones. We're going to get this cell phone smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. There's a certain point where that small doesn't work anymore,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And we saw it happen, right? I mean,
that's
like
right.
Apple, and then Samsung comes out with the bigger one,
yeah.
And now Apple's going bigger and bigger and
right.
bigger.
Yeah.
So there is a human component that, thank you. I mean, I think it's something we should always remember as we seek efficiencies and high tech and whatever, that high touch is invaluable.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to commercial right now, and when we get back, we will ask Larry about the California hotel market, and we're going to ask him about his mentoring.
Yeah, I want to know about the mentoring
program. Other things.
Okay.
Yeah. Eureka! You found... From Eureka to San Diego and Malibu to Bakersfield, the California Lodging Investment Conference, CLIC, is one of a kind, focusing exclusively on our Golden States hotel market. CLIC was launched in 2016 by Craig Sullivan, a seasoned hospitality industry professional, to harness the knowledge of our industry leaders, support our community, and educate emerging talent. CLIC brings together lodging professionals from California and beyond for one day of learning, professional development, and networking. If you are an owner, operator, investor, broker, developer, lender, management company, brand, or professional services provider, you should plan on attending CLIC 2 on March 8, 2018 at the Hilton Irvine Orange County Airport. We invite you to go check out the California Lodging Investment Conference website at cliconference.com for the latest details and sponsorship opportunities. Early registration now open, and as a listener of the Checkout California radio show, please make sure to use our exclusive discount code of CHECKOUTCA when registering for this one-of-a-kind California hospitality event that sold out in its very first year.
You got to wait for the man to cue you.
Now.
Okay, we're on, Paul.
Thank you. Larry, thank you again for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks.
Tell us about your overview of the California hotel market, if you would.
Oh, my gosh. So that's a big topic.
Yeah, it is.
You know, California is one of those odd states. I mean, credit a lot, if we were a country, right, we've got, what, the sixth largest
global economy
in the world,
yep.
right?
Yeah.
And when I studied political science when I went to college, and I did a couple of term papers on this, that we need to be split into at least three states.
California.
Because it's so diverse,
yeah.
right? I mean, if it weren't for the water situation.
Well, yeah, right.
Right? You could probably do that and probably uh-huh. should do that, but it's not going to happen. So the state of the California market, I guess, you know, from a 30,000-foot perspective,
right.
I'd say it's strong.
It's
very
strong.
But it's like any industry. It's a micro market. And it's not just an intersection in a city. It's like what corner of the intersection
right.
are you on? Particularly when you look at markets like San Francisco, for instance, where you just cross the street and mm-hmm. you're either in the Tenderloin, the Civic Center, or Union Square.
Right.
I mean, it really makes a big difference, right?
Right.
But what's been phenomenal for me is just the growth of the L.A. market.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. I mean, that is now, according to CBRE, is going to be like one of the seven major big cities in the world.
And we had,
right?
what, 1,300 rooms come online between two hotels?
Yeah, that's right.
First quarter of this year.
Right. And we've been monitoring that downtown, the micro
downtown.
Market of the downtown L.A. market.
Right.
And it did soften up in third quarter
yeah,
and in fourth quarter. But there's still going to be hotels coming on board. And everything I see, the
right.
demand is still picking up. I mean,
yeah.
L.A. is really starting to get their stuff together to be more of a global city. It's always
yeah.
had that.
Right.
But I think, you know, with the ports and the diverse economy, the growing, entertainment industry there, it's pretty vibrant. And L.A. does drive Southern California, certainly. So I'm bullish on the California hotel market, although if I'm being honest, and you know, guys know me, I'll give you both sides of it. it's a tough state to do business in. Let's be real.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
There are.
Right.
It is not that friendly for business and owners oftentimes, and this is why there are a lot of businesses that are migrating out of the state. But from a hospitality perspective, until this, like, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this tax. But
right.
What that really does. Are we going to get some legs to give this great run that we've had
right.
the last few years, you know, some extra distance on this? But I get nervous when we have these really long economic runs.
Right.
Like, when's the bubble going to burst?
Sure. We were talking about that at lunch today.
Yeah. And so I always take a kind of a cautious level of optimism about this.
Right.
Because it's not just my money that I'm investing in these hotels. Mm-hmm. We put together, you know, investment groups.
Yep.
And so I think that adds a layer of responsibility
sure.
to us as owners and operators. Not to be putting to try to mitigate the risk,
right?
And so we're always focused on, are we buying right? Are we building right? You know, but I think that again, from a 30,000-foot perspective, I think things are looking good for the hotel market.
Well, let's look at supply and demand as well.
I mean,
we've got a lot of stuff under construction. We've got we had the Intercon, the Korean Air building. Hotel opened up in downtown L.A. We had the Indigo open up in downtown L.A. We've had some newer assets in the Anaheim area and more under construction. Irvine, we've got, three or four new hotels this year alone. Now, granted, they're all select service, and I think we're seeing more select service at this point under construction than we are the full service and certainly the urban, you know, conference hotels. Let's just kind of take L.A. downtown out of the market right now or out of the conversation and talk about what you're seeing, you know, Menlo Park, Bay Area, other parts of Los Angeles, the beach areas, Orange County, San Diego.
I think they got properties planned for down as far as Dana Point, I mean, that just got approved. And there's
that's
a place going up in San Clemente and
that's right
by the outlets. So.
But there's demand. There's the demand. That's the thing. All those markets you just talked about. Now, if we were talking about Bakersfield and there's this much construction going on in Bakersfield, I'd be saying, I'm a little nervous about that.
Overbuilt.
But, we have got, there's international demand for all of those markets that you guys just mentioned.
Yeah.
Right? And so I feel good about that. I think the concern that a lot of hoteliers are still scratching their head on is what they call the Airbnb effect. What impact is that going to have?
Yeah.
You know, I was just in Santa Barbara yesterday, and, you know, that's a market where there are, you don't do, they've got an ordinance, you can't do Airbnb.
Anaheim and Orange County cut it out as well.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be the interesting element of what, when everything shakes out, what is that going to be? But, you know, I think the segment that we're in, mostly the boutique space, I don't know that Airbnb is going to have that much of an impact because, you know, people compare, you know, look what Uber did to the taxi industry.
Sure.
Is Airbnb going to do the same thing to the boutique hotel industry?
Don't think so.
I don't think so because the boutique hotel industry is not and was not broken like the taxi industry was.
Correct.
The taxi industry was a mess.
Especially out here on the West Coast.
Yeah. And so Uber filled a void that people were like screaming, we need an alternative.
Right.
So I use Airbnb. Regularly.
It's also the convenience, I think, if you're using the example of Uber, it's also the convenience.
Of course.
Right? I mean, the taxis, you had to go to certain spots. Uber's coming to you. It's the on-demand factor versus...
Well, plus the customer service element that we were talking about earlier. You did not get that in the taxi industry.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. I mean, massage services, you know, spas. And we're talking about boutique industries. You know, if you're putting in a day spa in a market... I mean, you know, there's Zeal and Soothe. I mean, I think Soothe got like two rounds of seed money at $25 million a piece in a very short period of time, right? The on-demand factor, I mean, I've shared this with Greg before. The joke of all jokes is when I asked everybody on the board of the International Spa Association, if you had your choice of getting a massage, and you can pretty much get comped one anywhere in the world at any property of your choice, where would you get it? Or at home, where would you get it? They said at home.
Yes.
Right? So, I mean, there is definitely a place. I think, if anything, the Airbnb impact may be more on things like bed and breakfasts, smaller properties, because I want to be in, I used one in Austin just a couple of months ago, right?
Yeah.
And there was no human component, right? But I was there for 3 days.
Yeah.
Right? So I think it will have an effect, but I don't think on the boutique sector.
It's also going to deal with, you know, Airbnb, the effect on the market that you're in,
sure.
okay?
San Francisco has been running at 90-95% sure. occupancy for years now.
Yeah.
So what effect is Airbnb having on the hotel market there? Probably not.
Right.
Okay. Los Angeles, there could be some effects here and there. Now, there was an interesting article in one of the hotel trade emails the other day about Airbnb and an apartment developer teaming up, and I think they funded them $200 million to start putting that into the Airbnb portfolio.
But then that's a flag.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, and it goes into Miami at that point.
Right. But here's the problem with that. When these developers are trying to find, this is where I'm saying the difference between mitigating risk for your investors
right.
or not.
Right.
When you have to use the Airbnb effect to build something, that's the only way you're going to make the numbers work. All it takes is a change in zoning.
Exactly.
And you're screwed.
Yeah, you're done.
Right? And that has happened over and over again throughout the U.S.
Or an ordinance coming through. You know, any number of things that can throw it sideways. And you're never going to see an Irvine company, L&R Homes, Turnberry, any of these major players in multifamily ever equate that into their projects.
Yeah.
They don't have to.
Yeah.
Okay. They're residential apartments.
Yeah, they're more all busy right now basically making up for the lack of apartments, right? And smaller property because everything was single family.
Yeah.
And so now you're seeing the high rise, the higher density. Yeah. That's the new market for them.
It is. And this is one of the problems when we talk about just the state of California.
Right.
It is the housing market.
That
we've got this push-pull where we want affordable housing. But then we've got environmental groups, which we have to have. They're saying, but we don't want housing, right? And so it's the basic supply and demand.
Evil developer.
Right? Oh, yeah, evil developer. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So I think that how many thousands of homes have we lost just in the past year because of wildfires?
Yeah.
Crying out loud.
Yeah.
So we've got to get our arms around the housing situation in this state.
We can't
afford to house our employees.
Right. Well, exactly. When you say affordable housing, I mean, it's a relevance issue, right? I mean, affordable housing in Orange County is
$800,000.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. I think I was shocked when I saw that somebody's entitled to assistance if their joint income is like $80,000 in Orange County. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. Well, Larry's got two hotels up in Santa Barbara, and there was a number of years ago that. Yeah, the teachers up there, they can't afford to live in Santa Barbara. Right. They're living down in Ventura and commuting. Yeah. So,
well, look what's happening in San Francisco right now.
Yeah,
a major city where your service personnel can't even live in that city any longer.
Right.
Right? Yeah. It's the house that I bought up there in the Castro District when I first got married. I forget, we bought it for a couple $100,000 and renovated it and made a killing when we left. When we sold the thing, but right now that $200,000 home is probably about a $3.2 million house, right?
Yeah.
Who the heck can afford that?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah,
right.
Very few
more,
right?
Yeah. No,
right.
I agree.
Yeah, and so you've got a lot of these buses that are hauling Silicon Valley workers back and forth.
Yeah,
right between San Francisco.
But at least you have somewhat of a dependable public transportation system up there.
Yeah.
Which we don't really have.
We don't in LA don't have or Orange County.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. San Diego's got a little bit of it, but not much.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Yagoozy.
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 Yes.
So,
you want to know
where the name came from, what it means.
All right, cool. Yeah, so I tend to be one of these guys. I just say I'm an aggregator of knowledge. I love learning. I love learning about business. I'm an avid reader. I interview a lot of people. I wish that I had somebody like me in my life 30 years ago when I was getting into business, because I didn't have like a real mentor back then. I just had to figure it out. I worked around some smart people, but there was no mentoring that went on. Basically, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, right? And so I was absolutely frustrated. I'm an avid traveler as well. I think I'm in 43 different
countries. Better be in the hotel owner business.
And so I'm kind of an Africophile, and in the Swahili language, there's a word called ungozi, which kind of we would translate to like transformational leadership.
Okay.
And I was looking for a nonsensical word for this mentoring website I was developing. So what I wanted to do is provide bite-sized nuggets of learning for these right. leaders and high achievers, because I recognize that people learn differently now.
Right.
Go to the airport, get on a plane. How many people are reading Harvard Business Review anymore or The Economist?
Right. Right.
They're getting these small little nuggets. Right. And so what I wanted to do is create a website where people could go and get short videos, short articles, memes, that kind of thing, that just get them thinking differently, uh-huh. that they could then share with their team members. We call mm-hmm. them team members in our organization, not employees, so that they could do a better job of leading. If we can, as leaders, help people move closer to their fullest potential, then yeah. we're doing our job. If we can create more leaders, we're doing our job.
There you go.
And so I just wanted kind of a one-stop shop. And so my business partner, Dave, and I were kind of brainstorming, okay, what we can't even spell Ungozi, but let's come up with a nonsensical word. If you think about some of the best information systems out there, they're nonsensical right. words. Verizon, for instance. What's Verizon? I got that one wrong, by the way. When I was married, I had some in-laws who worked for AirTouch Cellular, yeah, and then they yeah. became whatever. And I remember my brother-in-law coming home and saying, okay, they've announced the new name of the company, Verizon. I said, what? That's never going to last. And look, it's one of the best brands.
Yeah, it was AirTouch, out there. Reminded me. Yeah, it's true.
So I got that one wrong. But anyway, it's Ugozi, Y-O-O-G-O-Z-I. Z-I. Yeah, and so from that, people can just go and get free information to help them become better leaders. But we also run mastermind programs as well, where we've got, you know, roughly 12 business owners or leaders who come in and meet with us quarterly for brainstorming sessions, hot seat sessions.
Well, you're constantly sharing stuff, tidbits on LinkedIn and so forth.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm a big believer. Just, you know, you meet people in life and they learn something new and what do they hoard it, right? To me, that's... I'll just use the word. I think it's sinful. I think that if I learn something that can make me better, I get better by sharing that with other people. The
pay
people
forward.
Who the people yeah. who hoard things are fearful.
Mm-hmm.
They're think if I get this, then I can keep them from. I'd rather have competition.
Right.
If they're competing with
better.
Me, it makes me better.
Right.
I'm not afraid of
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
You know. And some people are. Yeah. And this is why there's like a lot of backbiting in business and trying to put other people down. Like, I don't need to do that because.
No. And you never have.
Yeah. Never have. Yeah. Well, I try not to. I've done it. And I'll be honest. I'm not perfect. But I've put people down in private before, you know, with conversations. But I try not to publicly badmouth people because I let them continue to talk. It's almost like the free speech thing. Let the neo-Nazis say whatever they want. Don't close them down. Don't shut them up. Because the more they talk, the more stupid they sound.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly.
You know, and it's the same thing in business,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Now, I have pulled business owners, leaders aside that I have no association with. But I mean, I know, but like no professional right. association. They say, you know, have you ever asked how are you coming across? You know, like what message are you sending to your team members or to the public? Because I think that the government ain't going to save our bacon.
Right.
It's going to be folks like us, business right. owners, executives, who are going to save this country. It's not going to be the politicians, for sure, right?
It's a disaster.
So the more we can do to have each other's back and have a healthy level of competition, the better everybody's going
to
be.
Everyone is. Everybody wins with that.
Well, it's like this, to me, to your point, it's like discourse or discussion about things that you may be contrary to where what your belief is, whatever. If you're basically not willing to engage in them because somehow by doing so, you know, you give credibility, you know. In fact, I find that a healthy dialogue from opposing points of view does nothing but increase and improve the situation.
Of course, yeah.
And yet we avoid these difficult conversations like the plague sometimes, and we are not the better for it by no means at all.
No. I approach these conversations. I have them all the time. Craig knows me. I'm fearless when it comes to having these conversations. And if I know it's going to be a heated discussion or potentially, I just say I'm just seeking understanding,
right.
not agreement.
Right.
If I can understand where you're coming from, Rad,
right.
then I'm going to open my heart and mind to you. I don't have to agree with everybody. There's a lot
no.
of things.
No, I mean, exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's that discourse. I mean, it's funny. We joke about this type of shows that we're doing that, you know, as a society, we don't even sit down and have conversations anymore.
No, we don't.
Unless there's some to-do list or an agenda item, we don't really have these free-flowing conversations where individual personalities, beliefs, can actually coexist in the same table. And I don't have to change your mind. You have to change my mind.
Right.
But we've actually just had a pleasant exchange.
Yeah.
And better for it.
But, dude, we are so longing for it. That's the that's the dichotomy of this whole thing.
Down.
We want it so badly, but as soon as I see that you say something contrary to my political belief on Facebook, I'm unfriending you. How immature can we be?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I tell people, I speak on this all the time at keynotes that I give, that we're moving into this relationship economy, or probably have already
right.
full-blown into the relationship economy, but we're so afraid to communicate, to have dialogue.
You don't want to
people who don't
somebody,
agree
right.
with me.
Exactly.
I think our education system has failed us, and parents have failed us by not giving us the skills to communicate effectively and with dignity and respect. Craig and I have disagreed on things, but I think we've always treated each other with dignity and respect.
Yeah, and we've always tried to see each other's point of view.
Nobody says you have to agree with on everything.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
How boring would it be?
You got something to say, Paul? You're disagreeing with us?
No. I just I'm monitoring Twitter here, and I have a unique question that kind of fits with what you're talking about here. Are we ever going to see the day when we have tribal hotels? They're talking about fan-based hotels, like the Star Wars hotel, where everybody there is a fan of something. Will we have hotels where just hunters go, or where...
that's called mindset. The lodge.
And I think we've got them
we've
now.
We've got them already. Yeah.
I think we've got them. Yeah. I think the people who do it the best are true boutique hoteliers.
Right.
Who understand that these hotels are supposed to be an experience, right? We used to call it, my old company, I give their guests an identity refresher, right? That you are where you sleep.
Right.
Right? And I feel better about myself because of where I've just stayed.
An affirmation.
An affirmation is a good way to put it, yeah. And so I think these themed hotels, now some of them went overboard in the theming of these boutique hotels, but I think that through the experiences, through the amenities, through the decor and design, I think that does create
and
support
the team members that are there.
Of course.
Yeah, celebrating the surrounding area and being a part of the community.
So which is it, Larry? Is it or maybe it's both. Is it the personality that is already there, that identity, tribal identity that's already there, that then the facility reflects? Or is it the fact that that person who is associated with that sense of identity, the facility then strengthens and has an opportunity to actually guide?
Great question. Yes. I think that in an ideal world, if there's, let's say that the three of us are working on a hotel project, we're going to sit down and brainstorm, and we're like, we did this in, frankly, I'll just, can I say?
Sure. Yeah.
This building that we're in right now.
Right.
Yeah. Craig and I have been talking for a long time about, wow, wouldn't this make a great hotel? And so then we talked about, okay, what do we need to do to win the hearts and minds of the locals? What do we do to make this thing a celebration of the community that's here?
Exactly.
Instead of the other way around, right? Where you just become a nameless, soulless place. So I think that those people that do it well, they bring in great design teams, great architects, and then we develop a service culture around it that supports that. So that, let's say, for instance, he used the example of hunting, for instance. Well, guess what? If we create a hunting lodge, but the people that we have there are vegans for a moral reason as their team members, that's going to be a disconnect.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we need to really make sure.
Give a vegan chef in a hunting lodge.
That's an interesting disconnect.
Yeah. So I think that the operator and the developer and the designer, they all have to work together in concert.
Yeah.
And then you actually market to that.
Right.
Because the problem, I think, with a lot of hotels that are just nameless, soulless, Me Too hotels, they have to take a shotgun approach to the marketing, and they try to be everything to everyone, and then you become nothing to anybody. Whereas boutiques really take more of a targeted rifle shot approach and really niche it down. They say get rich in a niche, right?
Yeah.
Or rich in a niche.
There you go. So how much of your personality, though, it's interesting, because I couldn't tell you that I've thought about this before, but it's coming to mind as we're speaking, right?
Okay.
Is how much of that personality of sharing? Like you say, you collect information, you're an avid reader, you're absorbing all the time, and part of that joy and reward is to share it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here we are in a hotel property. Right, that supposedly represents a particular kind of target market or, you know, affirmation for a certain tribal behavior, right?
Yeah.
Through that property, are there opportunities to then do exactly what you're talking about, which is send out information, actually share and enrich, so that it's not just an experience of the space, the furnishings, the quality of food, but there's a other element.
Yeah.
Now, when I go stay at your hotel, I'm actually getting a little bit more than just rest out of it. I'm getting a certain growth out of it.
Yeah. When we're at our best, absolutely. You'll see that at the one of our properties in Santa Barbara. You'll see that at the Menlo Park property. It all depends, right? Because all of this stuff costs money. This is the thing that people forget. There's a perception that if you're a business owner, you're a hotel owner, then you are just, there's money just falling out of your pockets. Can I just tell you, listener?
It's not that way.
Yeah. Boy, I'll tell you, there were years where I was the lowest paid person in my organization. For years, right? Yeah. Brad, you've probably been the same way, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just, that's part of business owners. We don't do it to get rich. Can we get rich along the way? Yes, more wealth is built through business ownership than employment ever. But there's, for every person who gets rich in business, there are thousands who lose. Lots, right? And I've, you know, made a lot, I've lost a lot in this. So all of this stuff costs money. I will tell you, I wish I were further down the road, and I hope you'll have me back, because there is a hotel concept that I've shared with Craig, but I just can't share publicly yet, that is going to be what we're talking about. On flipping steroids.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, you'll definitely be back. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that'll be very,
that is
very
beautiful,
exciting.
Beautiful concept. Yeah.
I got one more here. This is related to a show you guys did a while ago where you talked about San Francisco and is there no end to how much they can charge for a room up there? And you broke down the new Virgin Hotel. I don't know if it's up there or it's going to be built or it's already open. One of their only couple that they have in the whole world or something.
We broke down the cost.
And you broke down that cost and what they got to get $1,000 a night. And we all went, okay, $1,000 a night. A night, every night.
That's right. Yeah.
Is that for real? And that's is there no end? Is it $1 million a night? Is it?
That's for real. And you know what? Yeah. There's no end in sight. It's supply and demand.
As long as people are willing to pay it, that's just the way it is. If you don't want to pay it, don't go there.
Yeah.
That's another art. I believe personally, I've never paid $1 million a night.
No.
You know,
no.
I don't know that I've ever paid $1,000 a night for a hotel. To me, that's gluttony.
Yeah. Now, I did pay over $800 a night at a Holiday Inn in London.
Yeah.
And I don't feel that I was able to fly a plane the next day or any of that.
Yeah.
But it was a great hotel. But again, it was nothing disparaging on Holiday Inn because they're great hotels.
Yeah.
And they're also one of our sponsors at Click.
Yeah.
But $800 a night in London, which I think is the second or third most expensive capital city in the world. But it depends on where you're at. San Francisco is one of those.
Where does it end, Paul? I don't know where it ends. I don't know that it needs to end. I mean, it is the free market. It is capitalism. If people are willing to pay it,
is it sustainable? I mean, or is that just is that
till
the
next recession?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Exactly.
Well,
but here's the thing. Reset to a degree.
I think that it's sustainable if the global markets continue as they are. Because you go to some of these countries like Dubai.
Yeah.
And it's crazy money.
Yeah.
It's still Wild West money over there. But is it sustainable for the typical American to stay there? No. This is what I'm saying. San Francisco is getting out of sight, out of reach for most Americans to be able to go and stay any more than a couple of nights in San Francisco, which is disappointing. I lived there for 14
years.
And
as an investor, would you ever even dare to go into this? I would think that's
under the right conditions.
It would be very difficult to build a hotel in the San Francisco market. Is one of those markets that's very difficult. I don't see how you make it. Not in my space. But where it could work, Paul, is like adaptive reuse.
Uh-huh. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, finding a building that's maybe an apartment building or an office building and converting it into a hotel, but doing ground-up construction. Because, you know, the rule of thumb in this industry is you have to get a dollar in average daily rate for every $1,000 you have in the project.
That's why they were breaking it out, and looked at the numbers and what they had to get for this hotel.
Yeah.
But you have properties that are historical listed, that they come with tax incentives.
That's
There's things that are in different markets. I remember being on the island of Mauritius for 3 months, and basically they had a...
Island of Mauritius. Yes.
Somebody was in the
studio look that up.
On the previous show and name-dropped Rutgers, and you didn't give her a hard time. You gave me a hard time because I said Mauritius? Okay. But I mean, that the presidential villa in 98 was $8,000 a night, right?
Yeah.
And that's because somebody would hand somebody a script, put them and their entourage on a plane, and ship them over there for 3 days to basically read a script. So it really, you know, we who you're comparing to that's paying $1,000 a night? There might be a market that basically is doing that. It's offsetting it as business expense or what have you, right? So, but yeah, it's out of reach for the average American.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine being a person that lives in London? I bet you they couldn't afford what you just spent at that holiday.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, exactly.
Yeah.
So I got one other question I've always wanted to ask you guys here. Are we ever going to see new iconic properties built that will last 50 years? The Fairmonts, the Biltmores, or are we always going to be repurposing, redesigning, re-tearing stuff down every 10, 20 years? Are we just, is that just the new reality?
It depends on part of the country you're in. Larry could speak to this with all of his experience up in San Francisco and some of those buildings that Larry was mentioning with adaptive reuse. I mean, you know, you look at the corner of Grant and Bush, just outside of Chinatown, some beautiful buildings there. They could make some really nice little boutique hotels. So you're going to keep the facade.
But will anybody build a hotel that will still be around as a hotel 100 years from now? Will they build the Savoy? Is there a Savoy to be built? Is there a Biltmore to be
Disney.
Built?
It's called
Disney. I think so because there is capital trying to get into the market right now. If we are talking about during the recession of the 70s, no, you're not going to get some great products being built during them. But there is money available right now. And so, yeah, I do think you're going to see some pretty iconic properties built. Now, with the direction of the hospitality industry, though, it will probably not stay a specific brand that we know now. Yeah. Now, you think of the Bacara up in Goleta or quasi Santa Barbara.
Yep.
That's now a Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a great setting.
But it'll still be a hotel for, because one of the things you guys talked about is hotels don't seem to flip like other buildings do because you have an entitlement to do hospitality
In
terms of use, you don't see a building. It was a hotel, and now it's a department store, and then 10 years from now it's a warehouse or something here.
No, you don't see that.
Once a hotel gets built, it tends to stay a hotel.
You know, Paul, the other thing about it, I think, is you're asking a question with the reference point of hotel properties that have become iconic, right? You're asking, as you open the doors, will this property become iconic? And I would say, look back at those properties that are iconic and what made them iconic. Their commitment into the community, their being a center of meeting, that social component. I mean, you know, I keep thinking about like the St. Francis, for example, things of that nature. The reason why they're iconic is because of the role they play in the market that they are.
Why? You're right on, and I don't hear people talk about this very often. No. I mentioned earlier I was a political science major, and so in college,
I was too. For what
and,
it was worth.
Yeah, and I was working in the hotel, but I was working in the hotel industry, and when I started to understand and learn how was this country and a lot of countries settled, when somebody went to settle a new town, what was built first?
The hotel.
Hotel and the saloon.
The hotel and saloon, exactly. And it was there.
For the workers.
Then the jail.
Exactly. Yeah, but it was there where all the political functions happened, where the social functions happened. It was the center of town, right?
And that's where people came first to live there as they moved in. Yeah.
And so there's a level of romance that I have with these. And this is why I think the boutique industry does it better than anybody, that they do make it a social community gathering spot, those that do it really well. I mean, how many people, now it's changed a little bit, but how many people are going to the Travel Lodge to celebrate their big event?
No.
Yeah.
They're not, right?
But we've seen the demise of some of those.
Wrong with Travel Lodge.
What was the big hotel up in Century City that Reagan stayed at and it was there?
Didn't the Century Plaza.
Didn't it get torn down or turned into something else or whatever?
Part of it has been taken out. It's a smaller hotel now. It used to be the largest conference hotel in L.A. County. It's since... Yeah, there was a hotel next to it that was torn out, became condos. Part of this of what was the Century Plaza has also got a condo component as well.
In other words, do we think 100 years, or are we on such a short timetable? I was moved once. This is a weird analogy. I went to a place called the Oak Alley outside of New Orleans, and it's an old plantation, so one of the iconic plantations you picture from Gone with the Wind. And when the man planted the oak trees lining up to his property, he knew he would never live to see them grow. He envisioned them creating this tunnel that took 100 years for it to achieve, for his grandchildren to see. Do we have that kind of time frame?
Yeah.
I think there are a few developers out there that do take the long approach, and these are the people who actually are willing to spend on good architecture, good design firms.
With the assumption that this is going to be here for a long time.
But sadly, most of those people are looking at, and frankly, there's one in Orange County known very well who will build a hotel and frankly sells it before they're even done with it and flips it. And so there's not the heart and soul. And there's, now, I'm a little bit airy-fairy. When I look at new construction, I believe that every place we touch, we leave our DNA and pieces of us behind us, right?
Absolutely.
So these buildings take on soul, right? They really do. They take on a personality.
Yeah.
When you think about all of the artisans and heart and blood and sweat that went into these things, but if somebody, if the developer's thinking, I'm just going to get out of this thing, I'm going to flip it, decisions are made based on that. But those who build it with care and love and bring in these artisans and great design firms, I do think they take a long-term approach.
And we've got one that opened up, you know, it was under construction during the meltdown and only got one draw of its construction on. It's Terranea. It was over 20 years in coming to fruition.
Right.
So, you know, Paul, that's a hotel you should go to.
Absolutely.
Where's that at? Where's that?
It's the old Marineland site up in Palos Verdes.
Right.
Now, I refer to it as the last resort. I don't know if we're going to get another one like that in California.
Because the Coastal Commission and environmental regulations
that's only part of it.
Yeah, the expansive part of it, and just the numbers that go into building something like that.
But it is just a beautiful, magnificent hotel, and everybody should have an opportunity to go there at least once.
And because of its difficulty in replicating, that may last forever.
Well,
it may switch owners. It may not. It may lose money.
But
make
it's always going to be a hotel.
Yeah,
it's going to be, you know, part of that California coastal segment that everybody, you know, loves and strives to.
And it's a scary proposition, right? To commit yourself to such a strong identity from day one, like to say, I so believe in this property. I so believe in the differentiating factors of this property that I'm going to build my brand identity around this, and to hell with anything else. And I believe in it, and I'm going to stick it out. And come hell or
whatever
water,
fads come or go.
Right,
yeah,
because I mean, we remember we called one time. I called the lady up at the Biltmore in Santa Barbara.
Right.
We were talking about them celebrating their 100 years and all the stuff and the photographs.
One of our first shows.
Right. I mean, so I think there are people, to Larry's point, I think there are people that are committed that way. It doesn't matter if it's within my lifetime or not, but what I stand for, this is what I bring to work, this is what I build with.
Yeah.
Right. And there are people that basically they don't care what the finish is, how long they last, because they're going to just
flip it,
bling on it, and flip it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so, you know.
See, and you're right about that.
That's how diverse this industry is, actually.
You've got the people who want to come in and flip it and make their $2 and move on. You've got others, you know, Larry and various others and the ownership group up at Terranea, the Lowe's Hotels. You know, they're going to hold on to that hotel forever. You know, it's going to take something really extraordinary to get them out of that hotel.
They almost have to basically go out under and somebody come pick up their whole inventory.
But like you're saying, right, it does take a commitment, not just of your soul and your heart, but financially.
You know,
and I don't have that kind of financial wherewithal to build hotels like the way I want to.
Right.
And so all we can do, and I think everyone, this is the way you ought to live your life, you just do the best that you can with what you have now.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, and don't use that as an excuse. Well, if only I had $15 more million.
Yeah. But you see, part of your legacy that you're leaving is not necessarily only in the buildings that you're building. It's the people that you're working with. It's where you're leaving them, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Those are the touches that you're leaving.
So the leaders that you're
for
creating
you is not just the building or the property. Yeah. It's everybody that you touch.
Well, that's the difficulty. That's the paradox of the what I do. You know, I kind of describe our organization as an incubator for entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
But when you have an incubator of entrepreneurs, that means that people are going to leave the organization. You know what I mean?
The egg is going to hatch, right?
Exactly. You invest in them, and then they go away. It's like, so it's hard for me, honestly. It's an emotional drain sometimes when, you know, you invest in somebody, and then they go someplace else, or they do their own thing, right? But either I commit to it or I don't. And so I'm a flawed human, and I, you know, still struggle with this stuff.
We all do.
But,
good days in bed. Then.
Well, we're a flawed radio station. We have to come to an end here. Final takeaways. We're at the end of the year. What trends should we be looking for in 2018? Anything different? New types of hotels? Bigger? Smaller? Different? virtual reality. I don't know. What's the hot thing we should pay attention to?
I think
to?
All of those things that you just listed are very interesting. I think that one of the topics we spoke about earlier is really going to come back, and that has to do with the human hospitality touch. I think there are some hotels that have gone a little bit too far. Like I said, with when you walk into a hotel, and there's actually robots going up and down the hall. That, to me, we've gone a little too far on that. So I think you're going to see more human elements to it. But I think that we are going to see more.
And where do the humans touch you? Is it because you say you don't want to see them? No, I'm going to check in. I want to get in. It's late. I want to get out. But where do I need the human? Just to respond, to be a concierge?
Yeah, to be available. You know, there's a trend that, you know, people are describing the common areas of to be alone together. Like, I want to be in a lobby on my phone reading whatever, but I want to have people around me.
Yeah.
I think it's the same way with our team members. We want them available, but we don't want them hovering.
Right.
That all you have to do, I mean, the best customer service folks are those that have this anticipatory style.
Before you know it.
Before you even know it, right?
Yeah. They're there with the water.
Exactly. Yeah. You look up and they're like, can I help you?
Yeah.
You know, is there something I can help you with? Instead of you having to get up out of your chair, walk over, say, is there anybody who can fill my water or get me a drink or whatever?
Right.
So I think that you're going to see more training and emphasis on that among the good hotels.
But doesn't that imply then that you're going to go back to a day when people see this as a career and not just a temporary employment? The guy who filled your water 100 years ago was with that hotel or with that restaurant for 20 years.
There are some markets like New York, like San Francisco, where that is indeed the case. You have people who have worked at the front desk. We call them guest services hosts, but people who work at the front desk for 20 years. That happens here. In markets like Santa Barbara, you don't see that so much.
No.
In markets like Orange County, you don't see it so much. But there are hospitality towns. And I think that L.A. is going to start moving towards that because it really is becoming more of a hospitality town. Right?
It's getting to be more of an experience, but, you know, it's just like we used to have professional waiters and waitresses.
Yeah, sure.
Now they're all actors and actresses, writers, directors, producers.
Or unemployed somebody,
So, hey, I want to thank Larry and Melissa for being in here today, and we'll definitely do this again.
Melissa didn't say anything. Why didn't she say anything?
She didn't want
moral
to.
Support. She's the puppet master.
I saw her waving something, and then you would respond when she would do something, and you would suddenly go, I mean.
Larry was the first person I talked to about launching the California Lodging Investment Conference, and he said, go for it, and we have. And
we need it.
You know, Duran Lalani, I got your Christmas present. Thank you very much. You know, one of the other groups involved with the conference is AJ Gallagher. Jackie and Scott and Bob, thank you. I know you're starting and you're doing your social media and your push for the conference. We've got John Norcross, who's listening from Frisco, Texas, and selling real estate there. Mm. John used to do FF&E in the hotel business, is now doing that. We've got our buddies Glenn Houseman.
There he is.
Thank you for putting our show on your
No Vacancy News
website and for pushing the conference in your podcast. And Bruce Ford from Lodging Econometrics.
Yeah,
if you are not using Bruce's data, why not?
You should be.
Order it.
He's one of the smartest guys in the industry.
He definitely is.
Freakishly smart.
I was fascinated. I don't know nothing about the industry. I'm just the engineer sitting here, and I was fascinated as he rattled off all these statistics and stuff.
Isn't that crazy?
Michael Stearns, I owe you my entire career. If you didn't have faith in me 25 years ago to let me switch over to hospitality, I would not be sitting here. Merry Christmas, boss, and thank you. You're the best. I love you and Lynn, and thank you for everything. We're going to have a bonus show this Friday.
That's right.
Yep.
We've got some people coming by. Hopefully Larry will stop by for a little holiday cheer. He's always welcome.
I hear we got a little alcohol being served, too, or something. Yeah.
We got something being served. Sachin Shah from Atlas Hospitality is going to be dropping by. Steve Senft. We're going to reach out to both Bruce and Glenn, and hopefully we can have them on the phone.
And what time are we doing that, Paul?
And we're doing
same
that
time?
At noon.
Or noon.
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 So noon. I don't want to say high noon because that could be the way the show goes. But
noon this Friday, the 22nd.
Yes, this Friday.
Because what else have you got to do the Friday before
our
the holiday?
Our year in review, and I want to thank our audience and my co-host. Thank you very much.
It's been a lot of fun.
Larry,
looking forward
thank
to 2018.
You.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate
bring
it.
On.
Thank
he
didn't, thank you.
He didn't thank the engineer, though.
Thank you.
Bye, Paul. Thank you. You were talking too much. Thank you today.
Thanks, everybody. Larry, before we go, actually, yes. What's the website for Broughton?
BroughtonHotels.com. LarryBroughton.me is my personal website. And then Ugozi.com for the leadership
spell
stuff.
It. Spell
Y-O-O-G-O-Z-I. Ugozi.
Ugozi.
And check him out. Larry's on LinkedIn, too. And every time he posts, man, there's some nugget that, you know, takes a second.
Always.
But well, I'm on all the social media platforms. Yeah, just at Larry Broughton. Thanks, folks.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for being our guest today on Check Out California. We look forward to having you as a guest with us again in 2 weeks. Until then, you can always reach us through our Check Out California Facebook page or by emailing us at checkoutcalifornia@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. So do let us know what you think of the show and what areas of interest you'd like to see us cover in the future. Your feedback is very important to us as we continue to bring you the best hospitality our Golden State has to offer. Until next time, may all your days be filled with sunsets and palm trees. Now, go experience and check out California.